Today in Iran, it is the last day of a period of celebration. According to reports, thousands packed a main square in Tehran today to listen to President Ahmadinejad speak to the people as many chanted, "Down with the U.S." February 11th is the end of a week and a half of celebration known as 10-Day Dawn. On this day, in 1979, the Iranian Revolution effectively began when the secular Shah of Iran was overthrown. The army wouldn't back him anymore, and instead the Ayatollah Khomeini rose to power. 10 months later, 52 American hostages were taken at the U.S. Embassy. The United States and Iran have not had official diplomatic relations since. Author and journalist Mark Bowden. I was so nervous about saying your last name right, Mark. I got your first name wrong. He knows the intricate details of this period.
It's such a hard name.
You know? I'm having problems.
And you pronounce that.
Ahmadinejad. Yeah. girls got to do what a girl's got to do. Mark Bowden wrote "Guest of the Ayatollah: The First Battle in America's War with Militant Islam." Thanks for being with us, Mark.
You're welcome.
All right, take us back to February 1st, 1979. Explain what the political climate was like, that the Shah, who was supported by the U.S., loses his grip on the country, and then what happened in the 10 days that followed?
Well, no one is really ever sure exactly why a revolution happens, because, you know, any country, including our own, is always, you know, full of various kinds of discontent, and there was a lot of it in Iran. And really what happened was that everyone in Iran could unite against the Shah at a certain point. And so you had, you know, Iranians who were in favor of having a parliamentary democracy. You had Iranian communists and socialists and Islamist fundamentalists who all came together to oust the Shah. And it was at about this time in that process that the Ayatollah Khomeini, who had been banished, exiled from Iran by the Shah, triumphantly returned. So what happened after the Shah fled was a period of struggle between these various factions to see who was going to shape the future of Iran.
So explain to me who the revolutionaries were, and also explain how this period helped shape the current Iranian president.
Well, one of the major factions that was responsible for the revolution were Islamist radicals. And Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was one of the leaders of this Islamist movement on college campuses. It was he and leaders of the other Islamist students from the five major universities in Tehran formed an organization that they called Strengthen the Unity, which was an umbrella group designed to coordinate the actions of Islamist radical students on all the various campuses. And it was done primarily because the Islamists were relatively small in number compared to the Tudeh party, which was the communist party in Iran, which had a tremendous amount of support on college campuses. So just as in the United States, when we went through a period of kind of social upheaval in the 1960s, students took the lead throughout the country, for better or for worse, the Islamic revolution in Iran was steered in large part by student groups at these various campuses. And, of course, they're the ones who eventually targeted the American embassy.
And it's interesting in your book you write how at first they really didn't expect that the students who took over the embassy didn't really expect that this would last more than a year. They weren't really necessarily in it for that kind of length of time.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain, though, why these students were able to essentially paralyze the United States and we were unable to do something immediately?
Well, it was very, you know, it's fairly easy to take over an embassy. They're not heavily guarded places, or at least they weren't then. Embassies or foreign missions serve in any country at the invitation of the host government. So at any point, if they're unwelcome, they can be asked to leave, and that happens frequently. So the students could take the embassy fairly quickly, and they did it in the spirit of, say, a sit-in at an American university. They were going to like raid the dean's office and sit in for 2 or 3 days. The reason it became a prolonged ordeal was that the seizure of the American embassy triggered, as the students hoped it might, the collapse of the provisional government in Iran, and it basically forced the hands of the mullahs in Iran to become more assertive and to basically steer the country into the Islamist-style government that they have today. And so there was, I think the students who took the embassy were delighted, but also very surprised by the tremendous groundswell of support that they received, both from below, with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people in the streets, but also from the Ayatollah Khomeini, who initially denounced what they had done, but when he saw the popular response, he endorsed it. So now you had what was effectively a state-sponsored hostage-taking, and the United States really didn't have anyone to negotiate with, at least initially.
We're talking with Mark Bowden. He is the author of Guests of the Ayatollah, The First Battle in America's War with Militant Islam. So as you write in the title, America's Battle with the War with a Militant Islam, can you explain to me what about that event, the taking of the hostages, still informs the way the U.S. deals with Iran today?
Well, it informs it directly because the student leaders who forced the hands of the mullahs when they took the embassy are today the leaders of Iran. The supreme leader of Iran, Ali Khamenei, was directly involved in the hostage taking and, in fact, met with a number of the hostages during the course when they were being held. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, as I said, was one of the leaders of the student group that took the embassy. His cabinet of top ministries throughout the government of Iran are headed by, in many cases, veterans of that event. So it became sort of a defining moment for the Iranian government, and the whole kind of myth that surrounds their preeminence and their legitimacy, I think, is rooted in that act.
Mark Bowden is also a national correspondent for The Atlantic Monthly. He wrote a great piece in yesterday's Philadelphia Inquirer about hostages seeking damages from Iran. We'll link through to that on our NPR website. Hey, Mark, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Hey, stay with us next on The Big Show. What happens to your cell phone when you throw it away? E-waste. And what you're supposed to do with it. Coming up next, this is The Bryant Park Project from NPR News.